Hello, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the darkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyondananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Upwising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Well, hi there. Welcome to Wiki Politiki. I love that opening. I love the gong. I like the ohm. It kind of gives us ohm field advantage. So welcome, ohmies. This is Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed light on the undarkened corridors of power and shine a light ahead of us to where evolution is leading. Purpose of Wiki Politiki is to bring left and right front and center to face the music and dance together. In other words, to address problems and issues rather than just defend positions. Well, a few days ago, it came to me. The 2020s will become the decade of the citizen. It'll have to be because the entrenched and dysfunctional political, social, and economic systems that are hopelessly addicted to money and power are not able to reform themselves. And what's required is an outside intervention by we the people, otherwise we will devolve into just another third world country. Well, our guest this week, Stephen Michaud, has spent a lifetime so far in the entertainment industry. He's seen firsthand how consent is conceived and manufactured, how the industry feeds toxic memes, how it disempowers originality and imposes subliminal narratives, and how it can benefit us. Stephen grew up in show business. His father, entertainment attorney Marty Michaud, had clients like Phil Spector, Sam Cooke, and the Rolling Stones. After graduating from Vanderbilt University Law School, Stephen went into business with his dad. He became a worldwide entertainment attorney, music publisher, manager of music talent, record label owner, film producer, among other commercial endeavors. His clients have included the Electric Light Orchestra, Genesis, Peter Gabriel, Phil Collins, Leonard Cohen, Snoop Dogg, Ozzy Osbourne, and Hugh Masekela. He's even done a documentary with the Dalai Lama. He produced Bird on a Wire, the documentary film of the Leonard Cohen 1972 European tour. His book, Gods, Gangsters, and Honor, tells the story of his storied career in the music business, and his work and play have branched out to the fields as broad as metaphysics, cosmology, and politics. In 2015, he announced his campaign to run for the Senate from Florida as an independent candidate. He has also opened a school for sacred knowledge. Wow, so much to talk about, so little time. Welcome, Stephen.
Thank you very much. You got me interested in hearing me now.
Good. Well, listen carefully. You'll be on
so
very
what
shortly.
Can you pull out? Yeah. What can you pull out of me?
Okay. Well, we'll start right at the beginning. Your upbringing would have been the envy of any son or daughter of our generation. Your dad being a show business attorney, and you're getting to meet the music stars of the day, and not just meet them. I seem to remember from one of our conversations that Aretha Franklin taught you how to play poker. Anyway, let's start there. What was that family environment like, and what was it that you were being prepared for in your life?
As a young boy, I was sitting with all these stars, and I never understood why anyone would give away their powers to any of them. They fascinated me, but they spoke to me as if they would speak to their own children. The story you said about Aretha Franklin, there was a man named Clyde Otis, and Clyde Otis was working with Aretha Franklin, Clyde Otis was a producer. He was my dad's client. And he brought her over one day to play poker with my parents. I sit and I talk to anyone and everyone because I believe you have something to share with me if I feel your energy. And she actually sat me down and, you know, she showed me how they were playing poker. But it wasn't really poker. It was gin. They were teaching me gin, even though it gets misspoken for poker. But anyway, I grew up with this. I mean, I grew up and Dad would put me in the middle of a room because there was never a moment of silence. You know, in deafness, silence is the scream. But there's something to gain, and I would instigate a conversation amongst people, always. And I would talk to all the artists that came over, be it Ray Davies, to discover what he meant by Waterloo Sunset, or to understand a well-respected man, to speak with Donovan about who were the other seven tribes missing when he told us about the 12 tribes that left Atlantis. And he didn't know. And when I was pushing Donovan, my father stopped me because he saw Donovan starting to get upset. Donovan was there with Donovan's producer called Mickey Most. And I grew up knowing Mickey Most. Mickey Most had the Dave Clark Five, which were bigger than the Beatles when they began. You know, Dave Clark Five didn't go spiritual, and the Beatles did. That's what connected them to you and me. And it was an interesting upbringing. I mean, then I ended up with Capricorn Records, which is who I was working with as I was going to law school, as I was also a public defender, and working with them, they got me in the middle of politics. They got me in the middle of a campaign Phil Walden did for a man named Jimmy Carter, who I had met a couple of years before that when he took over from a man named Lester Maddox, who was selling axe handles to show you how he kept the blacks out of his restaurant. We live in a fascinating country. We live in darkness, and someone needs to just take out the light like the Rolling Stones did in the song you mentioned. Someone needs to shine a light, and we need to shine a light on what we believe is light so you can see it's only darkness and it disappears. Fear is darkness. Love is light. So I'm in your hands. Navigate me. Where do you want me to go?
Well, you know, I mean, certainly, you know, the young bloods get together. That was pretty much saying that 50-something years ago. And, you know, again, you've probably met many, 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 many people in the industry, not just performers, but people in your role as producers and executives and all of that stuff.
Steve, your if life, I may,
what
I lived and played this game in over 100 countries. I've been everywhere. I learned how people want. I learned how the media works. I learned why, you know, when I was young in the BBC, you couldn't put advertisements on the air, and I was raised to be a capitalist. I thought this was disgusting. But when I watch sports on TV today, and all I do is see this pill you should take, that pill you should take, this pill you should take, and then they quantify it and qualify it, when I see the airwaves being used for politicians to hustle you for money so they could buy ads and they could pay the media executives for what are free airwaves. I learned a lot learning the difference with nations that follow us. We were the first to have commercial radio, and they saw our dilemmas and our disease. We became nothing but a pack-eating man. You know, and when I ran for the United States Senate, at first they thought, this is cute, this guy's cute, this guy speaks a lot, you know, like Marianne when she ran for president. But they realized, wait a minute, this guy could attract people. And all of a sudden, they cut me off TV. They totally cut me off. They wouldn't let anyone write any more articles about me. So I sued the United States government, and they show up at this hearing I had after the first two were thrown out. And I was no longer a member of the bar, so they couldn't get me thrown out of the bar for questioning to have what I really need. The bar is nothing but an enforced form of a matrix. You don't get represented in a bar. The money does. You know, and they tell you to shut up and go away so you can come again and do it another day. You can't upset the system. They had 13 lawyers coming to stop me. I wanted to be on that debate. Then what they did at this hearing is I called it political payola. And I confessed to my crimes. My crime being, I knew commercial payola. I was the king of it. I got stuff on the radio that few people ever believed would get on it. And if you look at every artist I've represented, I say this very humbly because I represent an energy that's just a lot more than what most people have. This energy I represent got my artists when I was working with to the height of all their careers. And then when my energy left, because my lesson had been learned, I didn't do anything there for the joy, for the love of money. I did it for the joy of learning. And if money came with it, all the better. And I love spending money, but I would never sell myself out or sell out anyone around me taking money for their harm. I wouldn't do it.
So let me ask you a question. You know, what was it? What kind of intervention happened so that you became aware of that? That seems like so few people actually end up dealing with the ethics of the business that they're in. What was different
for you? I thought
it
was a lie. I'll tell you two quick stories. It's 1974, Roe v. Wade. And by the way, I'll drop a name. Al Gore is my classmate. So you got Al Gore, the son of a disgraced senator who got thrown out of the Senate for, they never convicted him of it, but they let him go gracefully for taking whatever that he was accused of taking from a man named Armour Hammer. So he was there, and Vanderbilt was, you know, basically whatever you want to call it, Republican City. And you got Al there, and you had me there. I was the mouth from Miami and the one that didn't shut up. So we're sitting there in 1974, right after Roe v. Wade, and this is right after that TV show, movie that came out about how hard law school is and how impossible it is. The name escapes me, but it's not important. That came out in 73, where first-year students, everyone's scared to death. And to me, it was like a game. Teach me what you know, and I'll give you the answer. You know, I'm very good at game boards, and I look at life as a game board. How do I get to point C from point B? You know, and everyone else is like, you know, you got to do this and you got to do that. It's like, no, you don't. You just need to envision it and then make your path to get to it, right? So we're sitting in this place, and now they're going through Roe v. Wade. It's constitutional law. And he says, the teacher who I loved, his name was Don Hall. He became a good friend of mine. And he said to me, and I'm answering your question, so I gave you this picture. He said to me, being the whole class, all right, let's go through Roe v. Wade once and for all. All those who believe in Roe v. Wade's verdict, raise your left hand. And all those who are against it, raise your right hand. So, you know, it's a small class, maybe 83, 85 people. And there you were. You know, there were a few raising their hands, you know, and then the others went right. And he noticed me because I'm a mouth. And he looks and he goes, Michette, were you dreaming? I said, no, I'm sitting here. He said, but you didn't listen. I said, no, I heard you. He goes, what do you mean you heard me? I said, I heard you. He goes, well, are you for or against the decision? I said, you said something in class yesterday. What? I said, what you told each and every one of us is you can't get into a court unless the venue has jurisdiction to hear your case. He said, that's right. I said, what gave any court anywhere in the world in 1788 the right to decide what a woman can or cannot do to her body? Well, that's the prenumeral right, so you're on the left. I said, no. I said, that's just make-believe gawk that's telling you these are the written rules instead of telling you that we're giving you an equitable decision so we could keep the balance of life here without answering whether or not we're following constitutional strict interpretations. He looks at me and goes, where did that come from? I'm like, I don't know. And he says to me, well, and I said, what? And he said to me, well, what do you tell me? I said, I don't know, but I'm telling you, I believe in equity. And equity is where the states did not have the rights to tell the federal government what a woman can and cannot do with her own body. I said, never should have been heard, should have been thrown out of court. I mean, there's one case. I've always been like this. I believe in equity. When I see someone picked on my whole life, I defended. I fought the bully my whole life. A guy like Donald Trump, I would be at war with nonstop. And that's why I'm so upset at different moments in time that I didn't get into the Senate. I mean, You have an entire Republican Party sitting there allowing this creep to destroy the Republican Party. He may win, but he's cost us our country in the balance because we're going back to an authoritarian government, as opposed, which I call the Sadducees, as opposed to the Pharisees with their rules, their make-believe rules to maintain their living, unequitable life. I believe in equity. I believe you must balance everything, and that goes back to what you said at the beginning of your show. It's the Moody Blues song, right? Hey, ride my seesaw, right?
Yeah.
If you go too far left, you got a problem. If you go too far right, you got another problem. The trick is to get in the middle and have someone maintain an order of balance so people still believe they're living for something. And that something they're living for is love, not mammon, not possessions, which will do nothing for you. And those possessions that they believe in are the reason we have COVID right now, be it fracking, be it genetically modified foods, be it poisoning the air, poisoning the water. It's like, it's insane, Steve. You know, I got involved in fracking because I ended up doing the form contract for fracking because at that time in the early, I guess, mid-70s, I was living with a woman from Houston that had an oil, gas, and software leasing company. And I showed him how to do the fracking form contracts, how to pay people. It was like a song. Who wrote the song? The answer in fracking is, who owns what's underneath the land? Mm-hmm. So you take it and you divide that revenue by the square footage of 100%. So you can't get people going, you took the gas that you made Earth blow up from my section, not their section. You split it all. Here's our well. All you people are here. You each get 10%. And by the way, you didn't ask, but I heard you ask. Where did I learn that from? My grandfather was a bookie. I used to sit and hang with these people. They taught me how racetracks work. The place where you could go live your dreams if you had a $2 ticket. As well as when you and I were young, they used to have, and it was against the law to bet because God didn't want you to bet until the state figured out they could make money out of you. What they did is they used to have the parimutuel game where you would guess the last three numbers in the racetrack daily take-in, and these people would bet on it. It was outrageous.
I come from a neighborhood where there was, quote-unquote, the numbers, which was basically the same thing, the numbers. We speak about a number. We have to take a break right now. We'll be back with our friend Stephen Michaud in just a few minutes. Steve Behrman, WikiPolitiki.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
A social distancing tip.
While the CDC urges you to avoid close contact, like hugging or shaking hands, there are other non-physical ways to say hello. Wave, wink, use sign language, salute, smile, give the peace sign, throw up an air high five, do jazz hands. Remember, stay a minimum of 6 feet or 2 arms length away from others and stay home if you can. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Okay, hi, this is Steve Behrman. We're back on WikiPolitiki with our guest, Stephen Michaud. We're talking about show business and beyond. You know, those of us born after World War II grew up with the TV as our constant companion, our teacher, our source of information and reality. Of course, we've also had movies, we've had the music industry, all of these ways that millions and millions and millions of people are tuning into the same thing at the same time. Looking over this, back over this past half century, how has media shaped our perceptions and misperceptions, and what can human beings do to regain our true compass and perspective? Obviously, we've lost it. You mentioned the Trump presidency. That's only a symptom. What's happened, and how can we get our true north back?
Well, I mean, the north, right? Why is the north the point that we go to? In my book, Opus One, The Colonization of Earth and the Making of Mankind, you learned that the Nephilim came in through the south, which is why Angel Michael, the warrior that protects us, came in from the south. So when you're talking with the north, it's like another term of basically getting back to your central point, your central focus, where you become not left or right, but you're in the middle. And it's such a hard trick to do, because every time you're born, from the minute you and I and everyone listening to you and I, when we're born, we're given a label. You're called a Jew. This one's a Christian. That one's a Jain. This one's a Muslim. You know, whatever. They could be Shanta. They could believe in Confucius. I've lived with all these religions. I've lived with all these people. There is a core value of love. And as you try to teach people what love is, which you can't, it is what it is. Love is unconditional. There is no ownership and there is no control. You sit there and you respect everyone and you accept everyone. When I did an album where I was going to get all the musicians to sit and give us a song for the Museum of Tolerance, no one would give me a song. Don Henley, I was doing it with Irving Azoff, agreed to do a song. And Peter Gabriel agreed to do a song if someone else did it. But no one else would do it. And the more time I spent with the people from the Museum of Tolerance, the sicker I got. I got involved in Orthodox Judaism. And I kept asking these people, why is not 1948 a day of celebration? What is this? They said to me, because we're honoring God. I said, which God? We're honoring God. I said, you don't even know if any of this is true. And I kept pushing them. And I said, why would you want to tolerate anyone as opposed to accept everyone? by meaning tolerating, you are now telling me that they're no good. You're coloring things dark. So the answer to your question is we're raised to see fear. If you get rid of fear, which is everything I've done, then you can get around. And people just don't get it. And all the musicians I worked with have all been part of my progress, unbeknownst to me, to go to the light and to figure out. Because only when darkness comes do I understand the shadows that are cast by living in a material possession first world. You can't have two gods, and the gods of the United States of America is money. Money is our god. And we don't even understand that we don't even have a U.S. dollar. It's called the Federal Reserve Note. And the Federal Reserve Note is what Alexander Hamilton won. He wanted European nations to invest in a business called the United States government. Well, they did it. And look what we do. We go around the world making people pay tax, even though we print cash. And we, the people, give away the money to make the rest of the world safe. And we're the army that does this. We're the people that suffer. And what is the greatest American power that we have? Our music industry is kaput. Our film industry is kaput. The art that we created is McDonald's by Ray Kroc of 1903. I mean, I understood it in the 1950s when they created fast food, because you were here, you were to work hard, Christian ethic, go get ahead of it, and look what we will become. You become a home where the woman, the most important aspect of a woman is she and only she, Steve, you and I can never give the natural love and support she gives to her children. We pull women out telling them that you need to go get a job because we now have interest. We're giving you interest so we become a debtor nation? And what is this? So you have more material and that material you can't enjoy? So now you're looking at your parents as they're a liability? And in the state of Florida where I sit right now, 80% of the dead are all those who are from nursing homes where you kicked your parents to the curb because you didn't need them, let alone afford them. What kind of nation is this? It's insane what we do. You hate your children because you can't afford them. We have schools that are just absolute jokes. So now it's private schools and you teach them lies. You teach them, what are you teaching these people? It's, you don't teach them truth. So what I've done, and I'm talking quick and a lot because I know we're in time room. I've spent my time learning stories. I don't want to know his story. I want to know our story. I want to know why the United States was not conquered by the Spaniards, because they had the maps. The Spanish came over here with the Vatican's blessing and partnership and went to all the industrial areas where there was gold and silver. They didn't come up into the Greenlands where they used to call the pagans, go on and on. You know, you want to talk about entertainment, and I used entertainment to learn truth. I did Ozzy Osbourne. What does I did mean? Well, I had Jet Records. I was working with Don Arden, and I was Mr. Fix-It, and I was young. We had a band called The Blizzard of Oz. I am the guy that got Ozzy out of the mess he created when he spit the bird on the head on the woman from CBS. When we had to go back to CBS, because he didn't want to be there, I had a deal for him with Capitol. But because CBS had our money, they controlled our purse with the band called the ELO. I had to break the deal with Capitol and then go back to CBS. And what I did is I was instructed, and I did it. I created a joint venture with Sharon Osbourne, who you know, and I owned the production of Ozzy Osbourne in a thing called Princess Production. So here's what went on. Then he went into a – what happened was the band wouldn't sign the CBS contract. So I fired the band because they wouldn't sign it because they wanted a bigger piece than we all agreed to. And I'm like, that's wrong behavior. You were supposed to get 50%. Ozzy was supposed to get 50. So I said, Ozzy will now get 100. And when you wake up, you can have more. What happened was I would have given them back their piece, but Sharon played it and fired everyone. And what they did is they changed the Blizzard of Oz to just Ozzy Osbourne, which I had to do in the contract, because CBS didn't know what they were getting. The Blizzard of Oz was working overseas. And in 1980, America was into the disco era, and heavy metal was not our thing, which would soon end. So when Ozzy bit the bat in Iowa, I helped him get out of that mess. Then when he peed on the Alamo, which he really didn't, he peed across the street, I'm the guy that kept him in America. I made a deal with Nancy Reagan. And how did I then, a 30-year-old man, make the deal? I was friends with her press secretary, a guy named Mason Morgan, whose father was at my wedding. He crashed my wedding, which was at the Hotel Bel Air, which I find is so funny. But anyway, we came up with, you know, keep America drug-free. We gave money to her program, and he wasn't thrown out. But scene four was when Randy Rhoads, the guitar player, went up in an airplane to buzz Sharon and Ozzy while they were having their satanic ritual ceremonies. And what happened was that plane couldn't go up as it buzzed, and four people died. I then left. I couldn't handle this. Don Arden had moved on. He was managing Air Supply, which is another story. But in my research, Living Life, I used to make fun of it, but I'm not making fun of it now. Black Sabbath and Ozzy Osbourne were created, recreating the Druid ceremonies, which is in my book, The True Story of Oz, right?
Let me interrupt you for just a second, because this is a really key issue. One of the things that's been going on is that there's been a lot of anti-Hollywood propaganda information and so on, a lot of this QAnon stuff and so on. And it talks about satanic rituals in Hollywood, which of course leads into the whole idea of, drinking children's blood and all of that. Having been involved with things like Ozzy Osbourne and Black Sabbath and so on. Do you see it primarily as simply a innocent pagan ceremonies as the Druids used to do it, or is there something more, something darker at play?
Okay, first off, the Druids did not do it innocently. Okay, when you're worshiping dark energy, the best thing you could get for your system is, if you live in that darkness, is to drink living blood. Each and every one of us don't realize it. When we eat meat, we're drinking the blood of a living organism. It gives us the iron that we need, oxidated. Mm-hmm. Okay? And the entire Christian religion, based on Jesus to become Christ, tells you, let's drink the blood and let's eat the flesh, represented by a wine and a wafer. And once you eat it, you transform, and you are now able to sit with Christ, no longer Jesus. That's their religion. And when you really look at the metaphysical religion, I believe in Jesus. So I know your listeners are asking. I really believe in the energy of love. And when you study history, the first time love is ever mentioned in any of mankind's books is Jesus. Jesus was the messenger who gave us the message of the eternal, ever after God of love. We live in a world of darkness. We live in a world where we feed off each other. When you look at the symbolism of vampires, that's people who feed off each other. When you understand the metaphysical truths of capitalism, it's where you capitalize on others. You know, there's a difference. Once you put ISM in there, you make it a religious belief. And I'm not saying that these people are correct in what they're telling you, but yes, there are ceremonies that go around where they do drink blood. What do you think the Santeria religion is? It's married to the Catholic saints and the male and female saints. That's all it is. They're drinking blood. In my new book, which is Opus 2, I go through the creation of all religions. And I'm finishing it right now as we talk. And that's what I'm doing. And forgive me for the beeps. That's not my heart. That's the air telling me there's another call. But yeah, where there's smoke, there's fire. It's the naked truth. And speaking these people in Hollywood, there's nothing they won't do to maintain their lofty positions. Look at this guy. I'll give you a great story. There's a guy, what do you call him? Weinstein.
Harvey
Weinstein. I knew Bob Weinstein. Harvey Weinstein and Bob Weinstein. I knew them because they were promoters out of Buffalo. We had a band called Genesis, new band that was just coming out, who dressed up, if you remember the original Genesis, in all different characters playing all different roles. I knew Harvey, and then somehow or another I got into it being the music guy for a band for his movie called Playing for Keeps, his first real movie. And in that movie, I was managing a band called Sister Sledge. So the next thing I know, It's August 1986, and I figured, screw it, I'll go to Chicago with the Sister Sledge, because the Chicago Bears had just won the Super Bowl in that previous January, and we were going to do the video there with them. So all of a sudden, she's flirting with the refrigerator, and I'm like, I have no problem with that. But then when she got off the stage, this predator named Harvey Weinstein started hitting on her. Now, I'm there with her mother, who was my co-manager, and I'm there with the four girls, four daughters, my clients. So Joni comes to me, and she says, you got to stop him. I go, stop who? I thought she was going to tell me to stop the refrigerator. I'm like, I ain't doing that. But even though I would have tried. And so she said, no, him. So she points to Harvey Weinstein. So she goes, come with me. So we walk away. I said, what's he doing? She said, Stephen, he won't leave me alone. He wants this. He wants that. Please stop him. Please, I don't know what to do. So I went to Harvey Weinstein, and I told him, you need to stop. He told me to, you know, F myself. Yeah. I'm like, Harvey, what are you telling me? He says, you can't tell me what to do. I said, I can tell you this much. She's my client. If you're going into a zone that she doesn't want you near, It's my duty to stop you from getting there. She doesn't want you. He and I got into it. He told me he would never work with me again. I said, if you're going to work and abuse yourself with women who don't want you near them, I don't need to work with you. He went on to become a movie mogul because he picked up art movies that corporations wouldn't do. He did have that taste. But having taste and style does not mean you have class. And then to think that you could go raping women because you could put them in movies, part one, and part two, women thinking that they'll allow, you know, he's being abusive, but I'll overlook it because I may get into a movie. That's the world we live in. And yeah, who's the vampire in that world? It's disgusting, Steve. It's disgusting. You know, I was my friend Robert Thurman, who runs the Buddhist Relief Fund.
Yep.
And by the way, I didn't do a documentary with the Dalai Lama.
No.
I did an album with the Dalai Lama.
Oh, an album. It's called Hope. That's right.
And the album is a Muslim's interpretation played with a satire, you know, of Christmas melodies blessed by the Dalai Lama to bring hope to people. And I put the album out. I was living with a Muslim who I told you earlier that I was living with. And I put the album out to show her I believe in equality. I believe in everything. Same way I put the album out. I helped them do it. It's called Hope. And CBS, Sony, wouldn't put it into stores. She saw me get into a war with Sony. And what happened was she said, Stephen, you got to calm down. I go, why? She said, what are you doing? I said, I want that album in the stores. It's beautiful. She said, Stephen, you're out of your mind. Let it go. I said, I'm not out of my mind. These people are out of their minds. And she goes, they're never going to let someone like me be anything more than I am. And I'm only, and she said this, I'm only what they limit me to be. And I said, not where I live. And people's fear of being told no, to being held back. I mean, we have a president that makes fun of people. I mean, that's wrong. If I ever had that position, I would encourage each and every one of you to go believe that you could run a 5-minute mile. You know, you could do it if you try. You could do it if you try. Sly Stone, another person that my dad represented. You know, I'll give you another great story. Sly Stone, it's 1971. I'm at University of Miami. I'm with my girlfriend that I thought I liked. You know, and all I'm hearing as I talk to you, the song Here Today by the Beach Boys. Mm-hmm. If you don't know it, listen to it. It's like, anyway, I bring her to go pick up Sly. And we're playing in the High Life Fronton down here in Miami. And we go to his hotel. And I'm like, wow, I'm going to go to the show with Sly. I'm a big man. You know, my ego, where I edged God out, was there too, which I've learned to be humble. Mm-hmm. Sly's sitting there telling me he's not going to the show. And he's smoking.
He was known for that. He was known for that.
But this is the first time he did it.
Wow.
And he was smoking perfume. And I called my father. My father was a lawyer. And they told me, Stephen, don't get into it. Just let it be. Don't go there. But I've had an interesting life. And all I want to
interrupt. I got to interrupt one more time because we have another break coming up and we'll be back for a final segment and talk about, well, who knows? This has been a fascinating conversation. Steve Behrman on WikiPolitiki, back soon.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
911, what is your emergency?
My kid shot himself.
All right, where's the wound, sir?
911, what's your emergency?
Please help. My son shot his brother.
911, what is your emergency?
Okay. 911, please state your emergency.
Every day, 8 kids and teens are unintentionally killed or injured by loaded and unlocked guns.
It wasn't locked.
Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and End Family Fire.
Okay, Steve Behrman back here with Stephen Michaud for our final segment here. I want to talk to you about something a little bit different, and that is the works of Zechariah Sitchin and, you know, your sense of how religion began. We only have about 10 or 15 minutes to talk about it, but why don't you talk about how you became interested in that, and then in the various books that you've written, tell us more about your interest in that and how you see the origins of religion.
Okay, religion was created. Okay, so I'm going to answer your first question, all right? Because this is detailed, and it's a labyrinth, and you got to get to the core truth. Mm-hmm. You know the Russian dolls which you take apart, and there's a smaller version? That's the truth. There's an outer energy that we are run by an inner energy, and that inner energy knows what we don't know, and that inner energy becomes the outer energy, and it's run by another inner energy that knows. And if you keep going backwards, you'll get to the heartbeat called the universe. We're all from the universe. So right now, religion is nothing but darkness. It's nothing but pomp and circumstances. And it's just rituals that's nothing but voodoo, as we discussed with Christianity in scene 2 of You and Me. Hmm. This man that you just said his name, Zechariah, right? Mm-hmm. And he was from a country that was a Russian satellite, right? He was trained, even though he had a Jewish background, which is a god I call Anli. Zechariah Sitchin was raised an atheist. But he also was curious, and he escaped, and he gets into the Middle East, what we call the Middle East, and he starts reading these tablets. He was excellent in religion. He was excellent in a mind that was able to see the meaning of the symbols as we see masks. Each symbol is made of energies. And if you know how to get through the energies, and people will think I'm crazy, but they don't understand, they may be crazy. We're just dense human beings. And if you learn how to lighten yourself up, and people do it through dance, we do it through song, a voodoo ceremony, what's that all about, right? When you go turning left and right and you're yelling and screaming, or a Sufi dance, that's all it is. You're trying to get out of just believing that's all you are. So I got to Zechariah, because when I was young, and these artists that I was hanging with through my dad, and I thought I was Mr. Big Shot, they were all reading a book called The Chariots of the Gods. Well, what else am I going to talk to these people about? I read the book. You know, and people in my high school, like, Michat's out of his mind, whatever. But, you know, I'm like, no, I'm not out of my mind. There's something here. Well, what is it? You believe that there were space invaders? I'm like, well, where did this come from? And what I did was I swore I would figure it out. I also had two grandparents who got all mad at me when I bought a BMW telling me I'm driving a German car. They got all mad at me when I was going out with an Italian girl when I was young, whose grandfather, by the way, was who they modeled the Godfather after. I could give you stories nonstop. But anyway, and I'm like, well, what's the problem? The Catholic Church killed us. They killed all our families. And I had one Ashkenazi, which was my grandmother's, my mother's mother. The other was a Samaritan. And I said to him, this is bullshit. I will spend the rest of my life to find out what went on there. And I think one of the worst things ever done was when Golden Meir, a school teacher from Milwaukee, sat there and, as the head of Israel, allowed the Vatican to have Israel say that the Vatican had nothing to do with Hitler. It had everything to do with Hitler, the Nazis, everything. They found a big idiot that would go make war so the Western Church could go take over the Eastern Church. And I did a movie right now that I'm waiting to go to Russia, but I need the visa. And since we're COVID US, no one wants to let us in, you know, and it's like the three bad big bad wolves, right? Anyway, we can't get in. So I'm in this movie, I discovered everything I knew to be true. The Nazis were the Italians, they were the Croatians, they were the French who rolled over and called the Vichy government. They were, you know, it was a war of Catholics. And then when we really study history, you'll find out that Romania and Bulgaria left the Nazis' axis when the Nazis went into the Eastern Orthodox Church and attacked Russia. But going back to that, I from those books I started reading, another man I loved and I didn't get to meet in his lifetime, but I read everything he wrote, was Lawrence Gardner. Now let's go to Zachariah. His books that would come out and it would be like, I'm fucked, forgive my language, but whatever. I'm like, I'm done. So I started reading all his books and I couldn't get out of them. I just, like when he wrote The 12th Planet, I just couldn't take it apart, but I wasn't ready to go there yet. So with my ability, I put out tons of African music and I would study religion through them. Their religions, like I did an album with Manu Dibango. Mm-hmm. And we had 13 people from 13 different nations. They had Barbra Streisand and Frank Sinatra of all the nations there. It was fantastic. I got learnings. I got to go travel the world, you know, and I kept doing it. And then one day I wrote a book called Spiritual Insomnia where I shared the truths of what are we? And then the LA Times wouldn't let the book be... They wouldn't let them write an article about me because they said, I'm going to incite riot. Where in the last chapter, I told you the game being played, how to make us scared, how to make us not breathe, how to make us do this or to do that. It's a game. Play on your fears. So I kept studying and I kept studying and I got more and more knowledge. I was in Israel. I was in Egypt, but I went to Egypt first before I went to Israel. I had a guy, and this is a true stories, by the way. One of my men that I met when I was in Egypt worked for the United States government after he worked for the USSR, and he and his brother are the two that helped create the spring overthrow of Marduk, right? Marduk, which is also Marduk, which is one of the film gods. I give you all these stories, and in my book, I dedicate my learnings to Zechariah Sitchin, who did not live long enough to do this. Also, Stan Lee was a bit, X-Men, Spider-Man. I had a company with this guy, right? Hillary Clinton ended up bankrupting our company. That's another story. But he knew all this stuff about the Nephilim and the Anunnakis. He read Sitchin. That's where he got his characters from. You know, and if you look at the eagles versus the dragons, where did this come from? East versus West. What are these energies? So in my new books, it's all there. I wrote them up as rock plays because it's the only way I knew how to do it. And I'll take you back. It's 1967. And this book's coming out, and there's a band called Procol Harum who wrote a song called The Salty Dog. I heard that song, and I'm like, Dad, there's something not right. I would always talk to my dad, and we'd go, Stephen, leave it. Don't go there. Don't go there. But yet he would push me to tell him what I'm seeing, if I'm here or there. And I mean, you could read these stories in Gods and Gangsters. And what I do in Gods and Gangsters, instead of telling you, I'm great, I did this, I did that, I tell you, this is what I did. This is what I wanted from it. And this is where it went wrong. Only in my lessons where it went wrong do I understand where people drop off the line of truth. They fall in line and they get a bank account. The most brilliant thing the British ever did is they taught everyone how to escape tax. What they did was, if you made money one year, and I did this for the band called Electric Light Orchestra, and I did it for Genesis, and I don't care, but to tell people the truth, they had what was called a tax exile. So in the tax exile, if you didn't live in England, England taxes residents. The United States taxes citizenship or residence. Okay, so if you're not living in England for more than 61 days or 60 days, being the 61st, you're not a resident. So people would go in tax exile, and you'd get them all their royalties. You'd put it into another bank. You couldn't be a resident of the United States. That was 180 days. It should be 182 or 183, but it's 180 days. And you just keep them moving, and you get all the money, get all their live dates. Then when they go home with all their money, they bring it back to England with no tax. It's the most brilliant scam I've ever seen, because now all of a sudden, they just put their bank into back into the Bank of the Queen. Beautiful scheme, and it's tax-free. And they live there in Lourdes, and it's like the song, and I did ask Ray Davies about it because it fascinated me, the song Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
And Shangri-La, when he started explaining it to me, I didn't understand it, but I sure do now. You know, when they say in that song, you know, sit back and relax, and here's your gold watch. You've gone as far as you can. You got your new car. You got your TV set for a few coins a month. You've reached your Shangri-La. And religion was created to make you worship the creators of us. We were created. We are aliens. In my book, I share this truth with you, that, and the scientists say that 300,000 years ago, 233 genes just appear out of nowhere. I got this from Zachariah, right? I got it from him, and he made me go further and further. And then when you really research what the scientists say, and you could find this, they say that a bacteria bit us, and it was a horizontal transfer. All of a sudden, we become aware. We could talk to each other. There's no other animals that can talk to each other like we can. They'll make grunts, you understand it. On my movie, Saving the Motherland, I recorded plants. I had a guy that was able to mic plants, and he could bring it up into our audible sounds where you and I could hear the noise plants talk to each other to decide, as a community of plants, which plant will get the water, which one we don't need anymore. And they would all sacrifice themselves. And these animals that created us in the olden world, which is the urban world, they created religions, and they built temples. Temples were built to honor those gods. And then they were duplicated by the societies of the pagans that got ran away and got out of the olden world. As they started getting into the Balkans areas, you got the Greeks and you got the Romans. And then you end up over there with the Druids and the Celts. And if you go right, you have the Hindus and the Buddhists. All this stuff's in my Opus 2 that's about to come out. And I just tell you where religions were born. They were born to keep you in a matrix that tells you this is all you are. And if you behave, you know, and if we could drink your blood of life, we'll let you have a next life in utopia. Sir Thomas More, one of the greatest books I've ever read. I read it four times. He's one of my idols. He wrote a book called The Utopia, which means no place. He was telling you what the Catholic Church did. You know, if you've ever been in Avion over in England, when you see what these people built in the 1300s, it's like, how did you build this? You know, when you go to the pyramids, I give you how they were built. And I'm not smarter than anyone else. I connect the dots. And when I did that, no one else really did. And Stan Lee told it to me best. He said, Stephen, I can't tell people this. I says, I can't do it. I said, why? He says, they'll think I'm nuts. And Leonard Cohen, one day, I went to discuss Buddhism with him. I used to discuss it. Leonard Cohen and I would just sit there for hours, different times, talking about God. He didn't believe in God. But one day he told me he's going to temple. And I'm like, that's what I want to talk to you about. He says, I'm going to temple L whatever. The L stands for the God. The L stands for the God on Lee, right? And I said, why are you going there? And this is my favorite line. He looks at me, goes, what do you mean? I said, you told me your whole life with me that you don't believe in this BS. He said, Stephen, I'm hedging my bets. I'm older.
And this planning was for finals, before he died.
You know, the song he did, You Want It Darker, on his last living album?
Yes.
He wrote that when I was, 1970, 71. That was part of his theme the whole time. But he didn't have the nerve to put it out. The last email he wrote to anyone, they say, you know, I was one of two of them, was, and I'll make you laugh in another minute, was basically to me. I congratulated him on putting it out. I said, thank you for putting it out. He said, Stephen, I'm not long for life. I had to do it. And he said to me, he said, don't you dare give up your quest. He said, you have the energy, few do. Keep pushing our envelope. I have a copy of it. And the whole it's like really, really crazy when you see all this stuff.
Wow. Well, thank you for helping us all pushing our envelope. Very few interviews end with dot, dot, dot to be continued. I'm sure ours will be continued. Thank you, Stephen Michaud. Yeah, for opening up this line of questioning and answering. Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you. Okay. I'm honored to do this with you. Be well.
And me too. Okay, Steve Behrman, Wiki Politiki, we're back with you next week. Thank you once again,
Stephen
Michaud. Okay.
Thanks. Bye-bye.